I first got connected to Israel-Palestine when I studied abroad and after college lived abroad in the country of Jordan. I met a number of Palestinian individuals in Jordan, both Christian and Muslim. Many people don't know this, but a huge part of the Jordanian population is of Palestinian origin. Their families were refugees from different waves of violence and displacement. But then I also had the opportunity to travel to Israel-Palestine to go on pilgrimage, but inevitably when you go on pilgrimage to these holy sites in Bethlehem and in Jerusalem and elsewhere, you're confronted with these injustices, the checkpoints. You see the settlements where only some people can live and others can't. Oftentimes the Palestinian population lives are made difficult because they aren't able to travel from place to place, or they're subjected to humiliation at these different checkpoints. Seeing these sorts of things firsthand was really jarring. And I was concerned that many in my faith community back home and the Catholic community didn't know about these realities, which oftentimes affect Palestinian Catholics and Palestinian Christians, not to mention Palestinian Muslims. And of course, Israelis are also negatively impacted by these injustices and these issues and the violence that they cause.
That's Jordan Denari Duffner. Her interest in the Middle East began long before October 7th. I'm Umbreen Khan, and this is Inspired by Interfaith Voices. In 2023, Jordan was appointed by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops to the National Catholic Muslim Dialogue. In 2017, she wrote Finding Jesus Among Muslims, How Loving Islam Makes Me a Better Catholic. And then her next book explored the barriers to doing so. She published Islamophobia, What Christians Should Know and Do About Anti-Muslim Discrimination. Jordan Denari Duffner is a former Fulbright scholar. She is also a member of the Catholic Advisory Council of Churches for Middle East Peace, which advocates for justice for all in Israel and Palestine. She works on the Advisory Council alongside Julie Schumacher Cohen. The two women joined me on our studio line to talk about their work in this current moment.
I think a lot of people perceive what's going on in Israel-Palestine as a Jewish versus Muslim conflict or a Jewish-Muslim issue. And I think that's problematic for a few reasons. One, because, again, Palestinian Christians do exist, and their identity is sort of forgotten or erased in that narrative sometimes. I also think that we forget that people of all faith traditions are coming together around shared values and around a shared commitment to human rights and the equal dignity of all people. So it's not that Jews and Muslims and Christians are all on different sides, but actually many folks from all of these communities are standing on the same side, so to speak. Pope Francis says, you know, we all want to stand on the side of peace and justice. He says, without justice, there is no peace. And then I think also, you know, Catholics forget that our faith tradition compels us to be concerned about those who are suffering, regardless of whether or not they share our identity. So even if there weren't Palestinian Christians, so to speak, I think Catholics have an obligation because of our faith to stand on the side of those who are facing suffering and oppression.
Jordan, thank you for sharing your perspective from your earliest experiences to your work in multi-faith coalitions and organizing. Julie, welcome to the show. I want to bring you into this conversation as well. But before we get into the details about the sign-on letter to President Biden that has already garnered 5,000 signatures, take a moment, Julie, and tell me about what calls you to work on this issue.
My story is very personal and relates to my family. So I have a little bit of an unusual background in that my mother is Israeli and I have much Jewish Israeli family. And so I grew up seeing things from a largely Israeli and American lens, but was raised Christian. And so in college, just as Jordan, I also went and studied abroad. It was the fall of 2000 and I was living in East Jerusalem. And it was the first time I really had an opportunity to be in Israel-Palestine and be in the Holy Land, you know, as an almost, you know, an adult and trying to sort of sort things out for myself. And I had to unlearn a lot of biases and stereotypes about Palestinians. And I had a lot to learn about Palestinian life and society and politics. And that brought me wonderfully into a class. I was taking, you know, classes in politics and also in theology and religious studies. It was a study abroad program with a school that had a Christian religious identity. And so I met Dr. Bernard Sabella, who's a Palestinian Catholic sociologist. And it's not an understatement to say that it was really transformed my life in the sense that I just hadn't understood the Palestinian perspective, the Palestinian narrative, and also the daily realities of living life as a Palestinian in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, the restrictions, the oppressive realities of what life is like to be a Palestinian. And yet I was also still very much connected to Israeli life. And so I felt like I had a unique opportunity to be sort of standing in these two places and to continue to empathize with the historic persecutions and experiences of Jews and Jewish Israelis, but to also step into the life and experiences of Palestinians as much as we can. Obviously, I can never know what it's really like to be a Palestinian. So leaving after that semester in college, I was a junior, and I continued to want to be engaged on Israel-Palestine. And that brought me to the work of Churches for Middle East Peace. A couple of years later, I moved to Washington, D.C., and began working for them for about 6 years in the 2000s, a period of time where there was a lot of hope for peace, and then a lot of dashed hopes for the peace process. So I was legislative director and deputy director, and one of my jobs was to bring Palestinian Christians and others from the region around Capitol Hill and really try to make a case for peace building and for U.S. policy to be more balanced and to be more constructive in terms of really holding the human dignity of both Israelis and Palestinians, because a lot of times our U.S. policy has not gotten that right. Today, I'm joining you from Scranton, Pennsylvania. I work at a Jesuit and Catholic university, the University of Scranton, and do local community building and local work in this community. But I've stayed engaged with Churches for Middle East Peace. I now serve on their Catholic Advisory Council. And so that's how Jordan and I got to meet each other. And we worked together on various initiatives to really bring Catholics to a place of greater engagement on Israel-Palestine and to see their role as American Christians in lifting up this issue. And of course, in the last few months, that has become, you know, ever more urgent.
This issue involves confronting a lot of stories that are painful and that have a lot of trauma. I was talking to someone over the weekend who said, I just can't watch the news anymore. So my way of coping with this is to turn it off. What do you say to somebody who says, I just can't, it's too much?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because one of my students on our campus was kind of reflecting on, you know, why do students get engaged in this, or why do they not get engaged in this? And I was also talking to my daughter, who happens to be 17. And they just had some wisdom to share in that, you know, you do need to live your life, which might mean taking care of your children and washing dishes. And, you know, you need to put one foot in front of the other. But it absolutely is our responsibility to watch the news. It is absolutely our responsibility to take in what's happening in places like Rafah over the weekend, where we saw that just an absolutely devastating attack and that killed so many women and children, Palestinians. And I think especially as Americans, our government is involved. We're a part of it. And so we can't stand aside or just kind of let these things go. We need to play a role. And at the very least, we need to take the news in. And hopefully we do more than that and we get involved in peace building.
The organization that you all are a part of and the advisory council gave Catholics an opportunity to put their name on a statement calling on President Biden to take action. Can you talk a little bit about the sign-on letter?
There are so many Catholics in our networks and communities who want to be more engaged on this. You know, I think for so long, many Catholics have felt sort of apathetic or disconnected from the situation in Israel-Palestine. But since October 7th, we've seen a lot more engagement. For example, on behalf of Churches for Middle East Peace and our advisory council, I was giving a presentation last fall, just a few weeks after the events of October 7th, at a Catholic Jesuit youth conference called the Ignatian Family Teaching for Justice. When Julie gave the same presentation last year, we had a lot of interest, but it was in the tens. In 2023, we had hundreds of students show up. They couldn't even let people in the room because there was literally not enough space for people to sit on the floor. So there's this new wave of Catholic engagement, and we wanted to harness that because people would come up to us and say, I want to do something, but I don't know what to do. And so we felt that this sign-on letter was at least a starting point. It allows us Catholics to, first of all, state what our values are And how our faith tradition guides us when we're addressing this political situation and this humanitarian crisis in the Middle East. It allows us to put our Catholic faith and particularly Catholic social teaching sort of at the forefront of how we're viewing these issues. But as you said, we also want to call for specific policy changes. Some of the things that come up in the letter are an immediate and permanent ceasefire in Gaza, the release of all of the Israeli hostages held by Hamas, in addition to all of the many political prisoners that are being unjustly held by Israel. We also want robust humanitarian aid to Gaza. And we also want the administration and our government to reconsider the weapon shipments that we have been sending to Israel.
President Biden himself said he was going to set up a red line. That red line would not be crossed if Israel went into Rafah. But the scenes from Rafah are pretty horrific. This was supposed to be a safe zone for internally displaced Palestinians who have been on foot fleeing from one corner of Gaza to another. The sign-on letter is asking for the president to call for a ceasefire, to take other actions. Do you feel like President Biden is listening?
I hope he begins to. I think in certain ways he's moved rhetorically since the beginning of this conflict. Just last weekend, he reiterated a call for a ceasefire more forcefully than he had in the past. But again, we're not seeing that backed up by a whole lot of action. The administration withheld some weapons a couple weeks back, actually right after our letter was released. But in some ways, it seems like that was more of a symbolic gesture than anything impactful. So we really need to see more because, you know, Israel's assaults in Gaza has crossed the red line that President Biden set. I think also, though, you know, we obviously want President Biden to listen to our letter, but we also want our fellow Catholics to hear the message in the letter, because, again, many of us in the American Catholic community have sort of grown up with only one side of the story, or we're able to empathize with, you know, the Israeli situation, but not so much with the Palestinian one. And so we felt it was really important in the letter to speak not just to the current conflict, but to some of the longstanding injustices and realities in Israel-Palestine, so people have a really clear understanding of what we're talking about, because I think a lot of Catholics are unaware.
Earlier, you described the standing room only crowd of young people who were attending the Ignatian Family Teaching for Justice Conference last fall in Washington, in which instead of just a dozen folks showing up, you had hundreds and it was standing room only. Now you have this public sign-on letter directed to President Biden. And if I hear you, the goal has another audience, American Catholics. I'm curious, who's responding? Is it the grassroots or the leadership within the American Catholic community? Is there curiosity? Is interest continuing to grow? And what are you hearing?
Concretely, the letter has more than 5,000 signers, and these are people who are, you know, leaders of organizations and sort of grass tops. But there's also many, many people just from across the country. And we have a comment line that we added for people to be able to say, you know, sort of what do you want to share here? And there's so many comments from people talking about how urgent this is and how they want to be engaged, how we absolutely need a ceasefire, and some of them have also traveled there. So they have seen the realities firsthand. So I think that, you know, these kinds of letters can seem like, you know, what is the impact going to be? We see this as a long-term learning and unlearning process, that we're engaging Catholics in a process that they may not have had the opportunity to be a part of, or at least in an organized way. So it's giving me a lot of hope and optimism about bringing people to this issue who have never spoken publicly, but obviously have a lot of concerns and even positions on it, but they haven't had a vehicle, or they haven't taken that opportunity to express themselves before. So, you know, I think it's a starting point.
Yeah, I hear you saying that. Jordan, tell me how you're seeing the interest in learning more among coalition partners and organizations that may have not taken a public stand on this issue in the past.
Yes, I've been really heartened by some of the groups that have and individuals that have signed this letter who, like we said, have not maybe been publicly engaged on this issue before. I think Catholics are starting to realize that the same values that motivate us to tackle issues of immigration on the US-Mexico border or to tackle anti-Black racism or these other issues are realizing that those same things apply here to Israel-Palestine. And so we have seen a range of Catholic organizations sign on to this. And that's really heartening because it shows us that, again, Catholics, other Christians, Jews, Muslims, all share some really core values that are informed by our respective faith traditions on this issue. And so I think there's more work to be done on the interfaith coalition building. I know here in DC, we've had a number of interfaith or multi-faith actions with Jews, Muslims, Christians, and others working together. I still think we could do more of that, but I think the foundation that we're building in terms of identifying what are the values that we have and how do we share those with others is becoming clearer. Mm.
How do you see the student protests that really took off in kind of an unexpected way after the crackdown on the students at Columbia University?
I'm a PhD student in political science at Temple University, and I think that this is a tremendously important moment in terms of social movement in the United States, really the most important anti-war movement. Certainly, we saw that in the opposition to the war in Iraq, but in the way that it's on campuses is a little bit different, that it really looks back to the anti-Vietnam war. I think it is, for many people, it is an anti-war movement in terms of, again, our country, the United States, is heavily involved in unconditional support for Israel's military assault in Gaza, in both in terms of diplomatic cover and in terms of sending weaponry. So I think these students are saying they're seeing this on their phones. This is not something that they are shielded from, even if sometimes the larger media is not covering things in the same way that it might be covered in the region. And they are appalled, and they don't want our country to be engaged in that. And I think we really need to listen to that voice. Not everyone is going to get every single slogan or every single thing perfect, but it's a very important moral voice that's being raised. And from the perspective of being in an election year, foreign policy issues matter. Voters pay attention to that, and they are paying attention to that. And we've seen various movements, most importantly in Michigan, with the movement called Listen to Michigan, where people were, you know, were concerned about this in the primary for the Democratic Party. Anyone running for election should be concerned about that. But that was certainly a movement within the Democratic Party to bring attention to U.S. policy on Gaza.
Hmm. There is, you know, a lot of pushback on these events. And there's a battle, I would say, over how to describe what's happening on college campuses. There are some who describe this, as you have, as a multi-faith solidarity anti-war effort, an awakening of what is happening. There are others who say that those students on those college campuses are proxies of Hamas.
I mean, I have heard that sort of pushback. I think we're seeing, in terms of the policing, the way that some campuses have really brought in, many campuses have brought in the city police forces. I mean, there's already been a study that, like, more than, I think, 95% of these protests are nonviolent. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to ask ourselves as Americans, is this really what we want to do with young people who are voicing their concerns, that are moral concerns, that, again, that are anti-war concerns? If you want to be critical of you know, what students might be saying or where they might be coming from, you need to contend with the very basics of this, which is that it's a moral issue and it's an anti-war issue. And it's an important time in our history in terms of it being an election year, you know, in terms of, you know, going back to where we all stand, you know, from our perspective. We absolutely are concerned about the Hamas's attack on October 7th. We mourn the lives lost in southern Israel. Innocent civilians, you know, women and children, and the people who are taken hostage, and we call for those hostages to be returned. Mm. But what has happened in the months since, mm-hmm, is not a just response to what happened. And I have family in Israel, so I'm very intimately concerned about the lives of Israelis. I don't want to see Israeli lives lost. But when you have a response that really destroyed almost the entire, you know, habitation for Gazans, this is not proportional. This is not something that I think is going to keep Israelis safe. And it's absolutely decimating the Gazan society for Palestinians. And that is unjust. And that is something that I think these students, they don't want to be a part of it. And they view their campuses and they view their government as being complicit in that activity.
Julie, before we go, is there anything that you would like to say or share that you're hoping for or that is kind of anticipated based on the work that you're doing?
Well, I mean, to pick up on an earlier question that you had asked, I do hope that President Biden is listening to these various initiatives. You know, I sit here in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He's from this town. He's known as somebody who's very empathetic. He's experienced a lot of loss. He's expressed a lot of empathy and care for Israelis and Israeli hostages, which is important, and as it should be. But he's not expressed that for Palestinians. We have seen some rhetoric shifts. We've seen some interest in, you know, not sending one shipment of weapons. But then he sort of takes one step forward and two steps backwards. So I do hope he's listening to this and many other initiatives around the country. And also, I think, you know, we are people of faith. And so we are hopeful that we will see a different. We're in a moment of extreme violence in the Holy Land. But at the same time, I hope it's a moment of opportunity, that it cannot go on like this. You know, we say in the letter that we pray that in the land of Israel, Palestine, where 7 million Jewish Israelis and 7 million Palestinians live, a political solution can be achieved which ensures justice, equality, peace, security, and freedom for two peoples. That may sound really naive and idealistic, but at the same time, we certainly can't continue on the road that we're on now.
Is there anything that you would like to add that we did not cover?
One of the other goals of the letter was not just to reach out to Catholics and inform Catholics and engage Catholics, but to also show support to friends of other faith traditions. I have noticed, especially in my contacts with Muslims, and that's the community that I'm more engaged with in my other work, that they've been pretty disappointed in the lack of interest and the lack of protest that they have heard from Catholics and other Christians on the situation in Gaza. They've been really disappointed. Some people have even been questioning these interfaith bonds that we've been building over the years, because they feel like Catholics are not concerned about something that is a basic issue of human rights and life and death and justice. And so one of the things that we wanted to show our friends of other faith traditions is that we do care. Maybe our community has a long way to go, but we are, many of us do care about what's going on in the Holy Land. And we also really want to affirm in this letter our opposition to Islamophobia and anti-Semitism and anti-Arab discrimination, because as we know, many of our friends of these communities have faced episodes of bigotry in recent months. And so it's really important that Christians speak out against that and make sure that our communities are inculcating respect and goodness towards people of other faiths.
Dr. Jordan Denari Duffner and Julie Schumacher-Cohen are members of the Catholic Advisory Council for Churches for Middle East Peace. To read the sign-on letter and signatories, or find links to their bios and work, please visit interfaithradio.org. Both Jordan and Julie are sustaining hope for peace. Coming up after the break, my conversation with Dr. Dwayne Bidwell, a Buddhist Christian scholar and author and researcher who's published a new book that chronicles lessons on cultivating hope from children battling chronic illness. Stay with us. You're listening to Inspired by Interfaith Voices. Hi, friends. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of our community. I don't know if you know this, but we are on the air all the way from Richmond, Virginia to Ketchikan, Alaska, and in so many places in between. We're a national show, and we are a small and mighty team committed to bringing you stories and sounds from around the world that convey not only the diversity and the pluralism of our country, but the beliefs that are shaping our world, our politics, our culture, and the ideas that sustain us and inspire us to think about where we are going. And that brings me to this question. If you value us, if you enjoy listening and appreciate what you're hearing, I want to ask you to take a moment to consider becoming a sustaining member of Interfaith Voices or make a one-time donation at interfaithradio.networkforgood.com. That's interfaithradio.networkforgood.com. Thank you, and let's get back to the show.